Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller, and this is NPR News. Now to a conversation about change and race and colorism in the cosmetics industry. Have you heard about this controversy with Dove soap? Over the weekend, they deleted a video clip for their body wash that showed a black woman removing her shirt and turning into a white woman. If that sounds odd, you have to see it to believe it, and I've tweeted out a link and retweeted one. The implication, which Dove says they never intended, was that the black woman is using the body wash and becoming cleaner and whiter. An ad agency executive told Adweek, either there aren't minorities in the room when decisions are being made, or there are, but they aren't empowered to say anything. I want to see what our guest thinks about this. We're also going to talk about Rihanna's new cosmetics line for women of color. She launched it in early September. It's been hugely popular. A Sephora store clerk tweeted out, I've never seen so many women of color in our store. Plus, all the deeper shades of Fenty Beauty are sold out. That's amazing. So we're also going to ask, what did Rihanna, whose line offers 40 different shades of foundation for all skin tones and races, what did she understand about the industry that the big brands, the L'Oreals, the MACs, the Revlons, didn't? I'd like to hear from you on this. Have you seen the Dove ad? What do you think's going on with it? And what do you know as a woman of color that the beauty industry can't seem to figure out? So talk to me about this ad. But I also want to know that if you're someone as a woman of color who buys cosmetics, what do you understand about the business that the larger brands are apparently struggling to understand? Here's the number, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Jasmine Harris is with us. She's founder and director of communications for the Hughes Company and an assistant professor of sociology at Ursinus College in Philly. Jasmine, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I wonder what you think about what that ad executive said to Newsweek about the Dove ad, that there aren't enough people of color in these meetings at Dove, and that apparently no one else could see the impression that the ad was creating. What's your say? Is that true?
I think so. You know, before I went back and did my PhD, I actually worked in public relations out in San Francisco. And there are people of color in some of these rooms, but most of the time they're not empowered to speak. Now, it shouldn't be that important in terms of, you know, power dynamics in organizations. They all have them. The problem is that we have been socialized as a society not to pay attention to the fact that skin color and skin tone isn't about race at all, right? Fenty Beauty has 40 colors because there's no clear boundaries of where one race starts and ends and where another begins. And if that's true, that means that we all, you know, from the lightest to the darkest of us, have a unique, you know, skin tone. And if we're women or men who enjoy wearing makeup, then we'd like to be able to find the color that matches our skin tone directly. Historically, we've thought about race as these very sort of finite boundary laid in categories, right? And if that's the case, then companies can go on providing foundations, for example, that only have, you know, 8 to 10 colors.
Right. And I just want to note for some listeners who may not be familiar with Fenty, this is Rihanna's new line, and this is what I was referring to in the introduction about 40 different shades of foundation gives exactly what you've just said, a lot of nuance and shading. And I'm just puzzled as to what these biggest brands didn't understand about what their market wanted. That's really the key here, right? There was opportunity in the market, and Rihanna obviously saw it, and the big brands didn't. And I wonder
what
your analysis.
Yeah, go ahead. Market. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, I think it's about what they consider to be market. You know, one thing that market researchers will tell you is that people of color are going to be, you know, a $3 trillion consumer market by 2030.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it is going to be imperative that these big companies start paying attention to these things. You know, when you listen to Rihanna talk about why she wanted to create Fenty Beauty, she talks about it in a very sort of matter-of-fact, nonchalant way. She wanted things that worked for her, and she wanted things that worked for other women of color. You know, I grew up in Apple Valley in the Twin Cities.
Oh,
and,
I didn't know that. Wow.
I did, huh. Yeah. And I always had a very difficult time finding makeup at the local big box stores in our neighborhood that fit my skin tone. And as a result, I didn't really start wearing makeup until later in life. And, you know, as someone who had that experience, if I were in an advertising room with Dove, for example, or any of these big brand makeup companies, I could, you know, provide that experiential anecdote and then, you know, make some suggestions about changes. To the point earlier about the Dove ad, I think that if people are not in the room who notice things like a black woman lifting off a dark shirt and changing into a white woman has sort of undertones of blackness as dirty and whiteness as clean,
mm-hmm.
That's probably because they've never had to deal with that issue before in a real way.
What do you mean they haven't had to deal with that issue in a real way? We're kind of surrounded by a discussion about this and examples of this in the culture, aren't we?
You are, but whiteness is the baseline, right? One of the other things about Dove that we're not talking about, and this came out a couple of years ago, I think, is that they have this shimmer body wash,
yeah,
or body lotion, and it says for normal to dark skin tone.
Uh-huh.
Normal, right? So normal is whiteness. Whiteness becomes the baseline.
Right.
And if you are someone who has been labeled as normal, right, and your very existence is normative in American culture, then even if the conversations are happening around you, it's not a part of your sort of daily understanding of the world. You have to be sort of focused and forced to look at it, which is why, you know, a whole room of advertisers created this video, watched it, approved it, and nobody stopped to say, you know, maybe this is not the correct message that we want to send. And I would imagine that that's in part because a lot of the people in that room never even considered something like blackness being dirty and whiteness being clean from a personal perspective because they haven't had to deal with it.
Let me grab a call here from Stacy in Minneapolis. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I'm glad you heard the show. What are you thinking about this?
This has been a struggle for me for most of my adult life. And I am also a licensed makeup artist, so I have access to several different lines. But this has been an issue. I've always had to mix my foundations because there was never one I could come across. And I also feel this is part of an institutional racism. I was talking to your screener, and I was saying, when you go into the store to buy pantyhose and you go find nude, it doesn't apply to my nude.
Right.
The same thing with bandages.
It's that baseline, you know, thing that Jasmine was talking about, right?
Exactly, exactly. And we are big spenders in the beauty and in the beauty department. You know, we're all about our hair and we want to look nice in our nails and stuff. And that's a huge, huge percentage of the population that they are totally ignoring.
Stacy, glad for your call. Good moment for me to bring in our other guest. Natalie Bullock Brown is with us. She's a film producer and assistant professor in the film and interactive media department at St. Augustine's University and with us today from Raleigh. And Natalie, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm glad to be here.
Jasmine and I, well, we started out talking about the Dove ad, and I want to go back to that as well. But we were also asking, what is it that Rihanna with Fenty understood about the market and confirmed by what our caller Stacy just said, that these big brands didn't? And Jasmine really said some cool stuff and interesting stuff about baselines. What would you add to that?
You know, I think I heard some of what Jasmine said, and I think she's right on. I think that mainstream beauty brands have taken the black market really as consumers for granted, and have and also have not taken the time in a lot of instances to really understand not only our buying power, which seems to be, you know, more important really than sort of making sure that this particular part of the population is served, you know, and provided the sort of products that, that we absolutely want and are going to purchase. But, you know, they're not taking the time to understand, like, our specific needs as black women. I'm not I think the makeup artist sort of hinted at the fact that, you know, they're black skin has different undertones. There are different things that you have to think about scientifically if you're going to formulate foundation shades, for example, that are going to really highlight and complement black women. And if you're not interested in that, if you don't care about that because you don't understand or you don't appreciate, you know, this segment of the population, then, yeah, it makes sense that there would only be two, you know, maybe three darker shades that Estee Lauder or Marc Jacobs or even Bobbi Brown or MAC offer for black women. So what Rihanna has done brilliantly is to demonstrate that she sees us, that she cares about the things that we care about, which, you know, kind of makes sense because she's a black woman herself. But she has gone to great lengths, apparently, to make sure that she took into consideration the wide spectrum of shades that exist, not only when it comes to white female skin, but but black female skin as well.
Right. Stephanie says on Twitter about the Dove ad, come on, Carrie, Dove executives' excuse equals an epic fail. This is white privilege. How could they be so blind in these times? And I just want to read a statement that Dove tweeted out after they pulled that short video. The short video was intended to convey that Dove body wash is for every woman and to be a celebration of diversity, but we got it wrong. It did not represent the diversity of real beauty, which is something Dove is passionate about and is core to our beliefs. Jasmine and Natalie, I have to give Dove some credit here, though, too. Even the glittery body lotion, Jasmine, that you were talking about, too. I mean, they have carried out and been invested in this idea of real beauty, using real women in a lot of their advertising, moving away from models. Natalie, now we see this video. Do they still get some credit for this? This is a fail, but for trying to change our perceptions of what beauty is?
You know, I mean, it's a fair question, but I think it really has to, it gets down to, at the end of the day, the extent to which the same sort of diversity that Dove seems to represent in, you know, externally in their ads, if that same diversity is represented internally. So who's in the boardroom? Who is in the, who's on the makeup team or the beauty team that is coming up with the ideas for how we're going to market these products? Who is actually in the labs formulating, you know, the whatever is the product is, whether it's a body wash or a soap or what have you? Because it's one thing to say, oh, we love and appreciate all women's bodies and we want all women to use our products, and it's a totally other thing to actually reflect the diversity that you give lip service to in the decision making that goes on behind the scenes. And so I don't know the extent to which Dove incorporates black women and black people, you know, behind the scenes in the decision making roles, but if they're not doing that, then it's no wonder that they did have this epic fail. That was tone deaf on so many levels.
But let me grab a call here from Anne in Minneapolis. Hi, Anne. How are you thinking about this?
Hi, I am Caucasian. I'm white, and I have friends of color and all that that we've spoke about this Dove ad, and I from them I'm hearing too that, you know, the black woman lifts up her shirt and it's a white woman, and then I feel like everyone's ignoring that then the white woman lifts up her shirt and that woman looks almost Hispanic or not your typical, you know, blonde, white, whatever, but I don't want to dismiss the feelings that people are having over this. I totally agree that there's an underrepresentation of people in color on an executive level, on a marketing level. Like your speaker said, are they in the labs? Are they working together with people of color to come up with these ideas? There's an underrepresentation of products, but I don't know if maybe the whole ad is not being seen here.
Okay.
And I kind of agreed with Dove that was their purpose to say, look, many types of women can use this product.
Jasmine, what do you think? I think I hear Anne saying it was the order that they put the women in their transformation idea here in the ad that maybe is the problem and not their underlying point. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say it's both. And it's not a small thing that the order is what has caused this uproar, right? It seems like a small thing if you don't necessarily have the personal experience where this is, emotionally impacting you. But it's a change that they could have made easily, and it would have totally adjusted the ad. And I wanted to add something to what Natalie had said a little bit earlier about who is in these rooms making these decisions.
Right.
I think what we've seen with Dove, especially with the, Real Women Have Curves campaign, is that it did seem with that particular campaign that they had been a bit more deliberate and a bit more genuine in their desire to expand traditional standards of beauty
right.
in American society. I wish that we would see that same sense of trying to be deliberate and genuine here. You know, even in their statement, it seems as though, and I've had, as a part of the Hughes Company, these conversations with some other big brands along the line of Dove, where they want to align with us, not necessarily in a genuine way, but because they want to have access to this market of people of color, or specifically women of color in this case, right? That's an issue because as we become more interconnected via social media, information, moving through this 24-hour news cycle, you're not going to be able to fake being genuine about wanting to have real diversity, because it's not just about who's there. It's also about how much money and effort and, strategic planning you're putting into trying to serve these particular markets. It's not just something that you can jump into. One of the reasons I think why Rihanna has been so successful with Fenty Beauty is that, to Natalie's point earlier, it seems very genuine, that she's trying to be very deliberate in providing makeup access to all women, not just for their money, right, but because she understands that they're being underserved. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that in the same way with Dove as it pertains to diversity and inclusion.
If you've just gotten in on the conversation, you're hearing Jasmine Harris. She's founder and director of communications for the Hughes Company, and Natalie Bullock Brown, a film producer and an assistant professor at St. Augustine's University. And we're having a discussion about race and marketing and cosmetics two things kind of dovetailed here. Dove and their ad, the controversy of that over the weekend, pulling this little video I've tweeted out. And it was short. I've tweeted out a link to the video on Twitter if you want to take a look at it. But also this larger question that was motivated by the success that Rihanna has had with Fenty Beauty, coming out with this line that has 40 different shades of foundation, and seeing just this huge response to it, selling out in stores around the country. And so we're talking about what we can understand, what the cosmetics industry is missing about this. Haven't gotten to colorism yet. I want to talk to both of our guests about that. But I'm curious about whether you've seen the Dove ad. What do you think's going on with that? And a larger question here, what do you know as a woman of color that the beauty industry cannot seem to figure out? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR, where Valerie says, why do women, black or white, need to cover their real skin anyway? The beauty industry exists simply to tell us we are flawed. I will acknowledge that, Valerie, as somebody who wears a lot of makeup and loves it. So I hear where you're coming from here. Christina says, I'm white and my four-year-old daughter has very curly hair. She just cried for 30 minutes about how her hair isn't beautiful because it's not like mine or her sister's, straight and not curly. And to the phones here to Joan in Eden Prairie. Joan, you want to talk about another segment of the retail market. What is that? Hi, Joan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
What'd you want to talk about?
Well, I thought it was really interesting on the whole conversation about benchmarking and defining normalcy.
Yeah.
Because the beauty industry could certainly learn a lot from the toy industry. Because when I grew up in the 50s, one of the key colors in my coloring box was flesh. And I think they changed that more than 30 years ago. So I thought it was just, I thought the benchmarking and definition of normal was really interesting. I wanted to add that.
Yeah, and Natalie, we probably see this in plenty of other industries, don't we?
Again,
where the baseline is. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, it's historically, what we really have to contend with is the fact that whiteness is the standard. It is considered normal. And so, you know, sort of under the surface, or, you know, I don't think people walk around necessarily today with the thinking white is normal and the standard and anything that is not white is not. But that's a part of what informs implicit bias, you know, that we have a preference for things that are white or lighter. And to your comment about colorism, I mean, you know, part of the reason why black women have struggled historically to be seen, to be visible, you know, in terms of beauty, and certainly in terms of as a segment of the population that requires and wants beauty products that speak to our skin and our experience. You know, going all the way back to slavery, I mean, blackness was not considered attractive. And we just need to, like, deal with that. And even when beauty products began to be developed for black women and by black people, mm-hmm. The sort of the purpose behind those products was to sell black women, you know, products that would help to address their skin and the quality of their skin and the texture of their skin and the tone of their skin. So we were really talking about skin bleachers and skin lighteners so
wow.
that you could have a better tone to your skin. And so, you know, and then there's this other added aspect of the fact that because of slavery and the work that enslaved black women did, which was akin to what enslaved black men did, black women were not considered feminine. And so that even, you know, ranges into our contemporary culture in a way that informs how black women are seen even to this day. So when you think about all of that and you think about the preference for lighter skin over darker skin, and certainly how colorism, which is just simply that preference, you know, developed out of this division, this formula for divisiveness that occurred and was used in slavery to separate the lighter enslaved people from the darker ones. I mean, we really have like a recipe for the type of exclusion that we're dealing with today. It's under the surface of our culture, and because we have not completely addressed and dealt with it, it still, you know, exists in the atmosphere. And so until we really reckon with this racial legacy of the white beauty standard being, you know, what's considered the norm, we're really not going to get to the heart of why or how really mainstream beauty companies can begin to address the deficiencies that they have in the products that they offer to Black women.
You know, Jasmine, this is something, the colorism angle of this is something that I was talking about with the producer, Jeffrey, who suggested this segment, who'd been watching what was happening with Rihanna's cosmetics line. And he pointed out that once you, and I'm sure Natalie understands as well, too, that once you start looking for this evidence of colorism, you will see it in so many different corners of our culture, entertainment industry particularly. What do you observe on that? That maybe, you know, those of us who are white are not really attuned to.
Well, I really think that it has to do with what Natalie was talking about in terms of who among Black women, especially, is deemed to be the most beautiful and mm-hmm. what privilege that provides them. If you look at the entertainment industry, we're really only about 5 or 6 years removed from the most visible and popular Black stars being light-skinned.
Right.
You know, Lupita Nyong'o was really the first, and that's not to ignore Grace Jones, but, you know, in modern day, Lupita Nyong'o's skin tone, right, and the fact that she was a dark woman was something that was debated and discussed very broadly publicly as, you know, she made her way up the entertainment ladder, and discussions about whether or not she's beautiful. You know, traditionally, the Black community has been represented by people like Halle Berry, as opposed to people like Lupita Nyong'o. And that does have actually a lot to do with the makeup industry. You know, if you think about what makeup is for, to the comment earlier about, you know, makeup being used to enhance cultural standards of beauty, well, if there aren't makeup like foundations and different parts of the makeup industry that reach out to the really dark-skinned women, right? Like I was saying, that I didn't have access
right.
to the kinds of foundations that would have fit my skin. Well, then how can I, you know, fit traditional standards of beauty at all, right?
Right?
It used to be that dark women in full faces of makeup just, you know, at the community level in the area that I grew up in were made fun of for looking like clowns. And that was in part because they were making do with the makeup that they had, as opposed to having access to, like what Fenty Beauty has provided, a range of shades from light to dark that takes into account things like undertones. I have red undertones, which means that I can't wear a lot of the major brand dark foundations. And I really love what Fenty is doing and thinking about things like undertones, because mm-hmm. that is also a part of colorism. It's not just the literal color of your skin, but it's also the undertones and what that implies about your heritage.
Right. And Carrie, if I can just jump in,
sure.
I just, you know, Jasmine just made, you know, what she shared about how in the Black community, a lot of times, darker skinned women who are using foundations that are not really made for them, that cause their skin to not look natural,
mm-hmm.
And actually the contrast between their face and maybe their neck or their chest, you know, looks is heightened because of that makeup. You know, one thing that I find really interesting is that, you know, and maybe somebody gave this statistic, but $7.5 billion is spent annually by Black women on cosmetics.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've learned is that this is to a large degree because we're doing a lot of buying and trying, and then it doesn't work. And so we have to buy some more, and we try again. And so this trial and error is causing us to spend a lot of money, which, you know, it has a couple of different implications. But most importantly, I think, is the idea that, you know, by not having the types of products that really speak to who we are and what our skin is about and that complement these undertones that Jasmine is talking about, you know, we're we're not only at a disadvantage in terms of how what we're able to put on our skin, but we're also at a disadvantage financially because we keep spending this money to try and find products that are actually going to work for us. And I think that that's a sort of unspoken part of the story of this narrative that needs to be brought out, especially since mainstream companies seem to only come after us when they realize how much money, you know, they can make off of Black women's consumerism.
Well, yeah, so Jasmine, I have about 90 seconds left, but I just want to, what Natalie just said, how do you think the big brands now will respond now that they're seeing what's going on with Fenty Beauty?
I don't imagine that they're going to do anything that feels genuine or
really
deliberate. Yeah. I'm going to just put that out there. That doesn't mean that they're not going to try to go after the sort of lost market share of Dove or in general try to capture some of that consumer spending that Natalie was talking about. But I just wanted to add that, you know, what our company does is exactly what Natalie is talking about, which is try to pull women away from having to spend money on these big box brands who don't necessarily actually care genuinely about what women of color need. But these small businesses who are run by people of color who are making products like this, who don't have the exposure of a Rihanna, are out there. But they just are having difficulty competing with these big box brands. So I would imagine, I would hope my company is invested in diverting women of color to these smaller minority-owned businesses and away from these larger brands. And maybe that will actually be something that encourages them to be more genuine and deliberate in their inclusion going forward.
Jasmine, Natalie, thank you so much. Thanks for being part of the conversation. And
Sarita
says on Twitter, let's not forget the problematic Korean beauty industry telling me that my darker Southeast Asian skin makes me look poor and dirty. Talk to me about it on Twitter at @CarrieMPR.